And that is actually the really cool thing about dogs. Dogs actually share a lot of our aging diseases, but do live shorter lives, so allow us that ability to study things in a shorter time span. And then also, more importantly, they share our environments.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and this is Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Today, we're joined by Dr. Rachel Melvin from the Dog Aging Project. They need owners of all kinds of dogs in order to gather useful data. You can nominate your dog for participation regardless of age, breed, or where you live in the United States. Use the link in the description to complete the brief survey. It should take you less than 8 minutes. If you're new to Dog Words, in each episode we explore the world of dog care and companionship. We Save Each Other is the motto of Rosie Fund, which simply means the more we do for dogs, the more they do for us, and they already do a lot. You can support Rosie Fund by making a donation on our website or Facebook page. You can also contribute by making a purchase from the store on our website, buying a t-shirt at bonfire.com, or buying our note cards featuring Rosie and Peaches, and our shirts on barkyours.com. Links are in the description. Your donations and purchases help fund the Rosie Life Starter Kits that make sure these senior and harder-to-adopt dogs have some of the items they'll need in their forever home. Any donation amount is greatly appreciated, but here are some popular levels. $30 provides a collar and a leash for a Rosie Life Starter Kit dog, and $100 covers their entire kit. Follow us on social media, even if you aren't looking for a dog. Watching and sharing the videos helps our channel gain exposure, bringing awareness to our cause and giving shelter dogs much-needed attention. Our free Rosie Fund YouTube channel offers great videos of Rosie, Peaches, and shelter dogs looking for their forever home. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions, especially if you have an idea for a topic or guest. Go to the podcast page at rosiefund.org to share your thoughts. Next time on Dog Words, author and dog behaviorist Kim Brophy explains the problem of treating your dog like a pet. The mission of Rosie Fund is to provide humans with the resources and education they need to give senior and harder to adopt dogs a better life. We thank you for joining our mission. Today's guest on Dog Words, joining us from College Station, Texas, is Dr. Rachel Melvin, a veterinary research fellow with the Dog Aging Project at Texas A&M. Welcome to Dog Words, Dr. Melvin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I was told about this project by someone at a dog park who was very excited to tell me that they were participating in the research and what they get to do and what it's doing for dogs. And I thought, well, that's great information, but I bet someone who actually is working on the project has even more information. And so I reached out, and the Dog Aging Project was kind enough to introduce me to you. So tell me a little bit about yourself, and then we'll learn more about what is the Dog Aging Project. So I'm guessing Dr. Melvin is a doctor of veterinary medicine. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm a doctor of veterinary medicine. I graduated a few years ago, and I've been working for a few years. And then this year, I'm doing a clinical trials or research fellowship with the Dog Aging Project.
And what was your journey to becoming a veterinarian? Had you always wanted to be a veterinarian, or did you start down one path and then find that?
I actually went to undergrad to be a forensic anthropologist. I wanted to be bones. And then I'd always worked with animals in high school volunteering, and I didn't have a car and couldn't do that. And I missed it so much. So the next year, my sophomore year, I started working at a wildlife rehab. And then I would be like, well, can we do this? Or can we do this for the animals? Can we do this? Can we fix it this way? And their answer was like, well, if you're a veterinarian, I was like, well, I'm going to go be a veterinarian then, because this is what I find my passion in. This is like where I want to be and where I'm more interested to always keep learning is how to help animals and how to fix animals. So that started me down the path. And then I ended up in vet school, spent 4 years doing that. And since coming out, I've developed a love and interest in surgery. So hopefully one day I want to be a veterinary surgeon. And then I'm spending this year getting a lot more acquainted with research, especially a giant project like this one and everything it can entail for animal health.
I'll admit that if someone is a guest on a podcast in their role as being a veterinarian, it's a self-selecting group. You're not going to have people who, I hate being a veterinarian. I would just love to change careers, but I'll be a guest on a podcast and answer all your questions. That being said, none of the many, many guests who have been veterinarians on this show have said, my high school counselor gave me an aptitude test and said, you should either be a veterinarian or a, you know, something else. It's some sort of passion that even if they sort of detoured into something else, their love of animals, their passion for helping, for giving, brought them back to being a veterinarian, even if they weren't on that course all along. No one else steered them into being a veterinarian. They followed their passion and found that. Does that seem to be true for the veterinarians you talk to who are not guests on podcasts?
Absolutely. I think we all come with a story, whether it's we were a small child that grew up with animals and have always wanted to be an animal doctor, all the way to mine, where it was something that I hadn't really considered until it was something I missed and then got back into and then discovered the medicine side of it. I think it is a very difficult path and you don't stay on it. You're weeded out if it's not something you truly love and are passionate about, because the one or two naysays you get, which all veterinarians get along the way, they steer you a different direction because you listen, because you don't have that passion to fight through it. So I would say there's always outliers and people who prove me wrong, but for the most part, we are almost all just in this because we can't imagine doing really anything else, or at least we didn't along our way.
Well, I hope all of our listeners who have veterinarians, because I guess most of our listeners probably do have animal in the household, so they have interactions with veterinarians, appreciate what veterinarians do and what it takes to become a veterinarian. It might be easy to take for granted if your only interactions with veterinarians are regular checkups and your dog has no issues, and this is just some person who just kind of pokes around on your dog and says, yeah, they're okay, maybe they could use a little weight, switch to this dog food, and I'll see you in 6 months or a year. But there's so much more that a veterinarian has to be trained to do. And your personal family doctor went to medical school to work on humans. Your veterinarian is trained on multiple species, not just your dog or your breed of dog, but all breeds of dogs and multiple kinds of animals. So it's a very challenging program. And as you indicate, if you don't have a passion for it, if you're in it for the money, and I can't imagine someone going into veterinary medicine for the money, there's certainly a higher calling that they're following. So thank you so much for sticking with it and getting to this point in your career where you're working with the Dog Aging Project. So what is the project and how did you get involved?
So it is a multi-institutional, and we actually have researchers all over the country, but it's kind of a community science project that we get funding from the NIA, the National Institute of Aging, which is part of the National Institute of Health. But it's this big project that spans multiple institutions. And then even more so, we're including dogs from all over the United States to participate. And we want to look at all of their data that we can collect from their lifetime. So we want them from puppies, middle-aged, older dogs all joining and then following them throughout their life to find different things that can help improve their longevity. So living longer, as well as their health span. So having a longer number of healthy years, not just how much longer we can get them to live, but make those years great years as well. That's kind of a very simplified version of what a giant and complex project it is. For me, I wanted to do surgery eventually, and within surgery, there's a lot of musculoskeletal diseases as well as other systemic diseases that are becoming more profound as we have a aging dog population that is living longer and longer. And being a younger veterinarian, nowadays it's becoming much more prominent for people to actually want to go further and do more. And veterinary medicine is getting to go as far as human medicine, and we're starting to bridge that gap. So there's a lot we can learn about aging dogs. And I personally, wanting to go into surgery, wanted to kind of strengthen my research knowledge. So that's how I ended up here, was wanting to get more experience with research itself, as well as a project like this, where we're really looking at dogs as a population and learning from them and everything that we can use that towards in the future for helping dogs live happier, healthier, longer.
It wasn't that long ago that end of life issues was not a very complex subject with dogs, because we didn't have the diet that is as healthy as it is now for them. And we certainly didn't have the care that prolonged them with a quality of life. It's one thing just to keep a dog alive, but to give it a quality of life, for instance, with Peaches, who passed away a few months ago, our pit bull boxer mix, she was 15 and she died of multiple cancers. And we were actually treating a cancer that was superseded by other cancer that was not treatable. So had it just been that cancer, she would have had many more months of quality of life. But we ceased that treatment because there was cancer that, regardless of species, there was nothing more that we could do for her other than to keep her comfortable. Growing up on a farm, it wasn't that we were cavalier about the cure for our dogs. It's just that their life was so different. It wasn't going to be a 15-year-old dog dying of cancer on a farm.
No.
But now, not only do we take better care of our dogs, feed them better, as I mentioned a moment ago, the majority of dogs aren't living the hard life of a farm dog. They're living a very sheltered, comfortable life, just as any number of species that a domesticated version of that animal is going to live a lot longer than one in the wild. So with the Dog Aging Project, how are you getting subjects for this?
We actually are recruiting from all over the country, all walks of life. So we still want those farm dogs because we think that they have a lot to contribute. Because like you said, as we're learning more in all aspects of dogs' lives, whether it's nutrition, activity, healthcare that we provide them and are able to provide them, that they're living hopefully longer everywhere. But we want to know, is our farm dog getting that longevity as well? Or dogs that live in urban environments facing more or different diseases and vice versa. So we want dogs from all walks of life, all different neighborhoods, suburbs. We want, you know, the working dogs, the ranch dogs. We want your purse pets, all of them, because they all have valuable information. So we're trying to recruit from everywhere, all different counties, states, everything, different diets. If you home cook their meal and they eat something different that you pre-plan every day, or if they eat Alpo every day. Like, we want all of their information because we can't know things without actually getting to look at them. So we need to look at everybody to know how it affects the general population. And if there are different things that correlate with living longer, happier, healthier, that's how we find out, is when we get to look at them and compare. So we're trying to get as many people, we're advertising anywhere, but mostly hoping people tell friends and get the word out. Their own people can go to our website and sign their own dog up. So it's a self-nomination process, is that if you're willing to participate, which the minimum participation is simply filling out surveys. It's something you can do at home. You don't have to get them anywhere. You don't have to do anything special. So it's a survey you can fill out on your computer at home. I wouldn't recommend doing it on your phone. I'm personally not a good phone person. I accidentally type too many things and letters that didn't mean to go in. So I recommend a computer if you can, but it's pretty simple to join, and we want everyone to join if they can.
I will link to the Dog Aging Project in the description for this episode, and you just have to click on, and I've already looked at this. I do not have a dog to nominate right now. Peaches would have been a great subject because she loved sharing information. She was very outgoing. But there's a highlighted link that says nominate your dog, and the survey, it says it just takes 2 to 8 minutes. And so in 2 to 8 minutes, you can get the ball rolling on being part of a longitudinal study. Is there a requirement for like age? Like if a dog, for instance, had we gotten Peaches in a year ago, it's like, well, she's already 14. You're not going to have her life history like you would enrolling a puppy. Are you taking dogs of all ages into the study?
Absolutely. We want all dogs. Like, puppies are great, but we also want older dogs because they still have valuable information. Unfortunately, this is as a longitudinal study. That means we do this year after year after year. There are unfortunately going to be dogs that die during that. And they actually have a lot of information to give us because that's how we know who lives longer. And their information can still be included from puppies that we follow their entire lives. It can still be the same data sets. We just get to follow them a shorter amount of time, but they still have a lot of information to share, and it's very valuable. So any age, our only real restriction right now is if you have 3 dogs, you have to pick one. And in that case, it's really up to you who you pick. We don't have any recommendation as far as the younger or the healthier or anything like that. We just just pick one.
Or you're not looking at, we're low on this breed. If there's, you know, people out there with some rare breed like Brock de Bourbonnais, we only have one. If we could get a couple more, but we have plenty of golden retrievers. We have more golden retrievers than we know what to do with. Is that the case? Or does it matter?
Not really. Not that specific. If you have a rare breed and you think that it'd be great for us to have more data, we'd love it. But we also love mixed breed dogs. It's not only about their breed and things like that. It's also about their environments. One of our big ones is we are trying to recruit from kind of not just our main urban areas, but getting out into suburbs and rural areas and making sure that we have equal distribution across owner demographics, not just dog demographics. If you'd like to nominate your rare breed, that's great. If you'd like to nominate your, I always call my dog a valley mutt because he came from the Valley of Texas and he's a mutt and I love him and he's part of the pack. Both have equal things to contribute.
With a longitudinal study of human aging or human morbidity or anything, you're looking at a population that you'd like to study for 60, 70, 80, 90 years. I think what's pretty exciting about the dog aging project is, unfortunately, a dog's lifespan is much shorter than ours, but fortunately, that allows you to see results much sooner. Is there any exciting information you've gathered in the study already?
Right now, we've only scratched the surface of what we're going to be able to do, I think, with this project. We're just starting to really delve into the data. And then year after year, we get to add more and see more. One of the big ones that we've had kind of come out semi-recently that I personally like is we found an association between physical activity and better cognitive health, like intellectually, like keeping everything up to date, not doing the what we call like doggy dementia type things, but actually staying very healthy when it comes to their mental status. I like this because it's one of those things that we find that actually leads to more questions. And I think that's a really fun thing about research and being a scientist, because I was always that what if kid, you know, what if thousand scenarios. And with science, when you answer one question or you find one association, there's a bunch more. So this one, physical activity has a positive association with mental health. Is that because if your dogs are more physically active, they stay like cognitive health stays better longer? Is it because if their cognitive health is better longer, they stay more active longer? Is it an owner recognition that they're more mentally there? So they want to stimulate it by going out and doing more activities. Whereas dogs that seem to have declining cognitive health, they stay more inside and do more inside activities for their comfort. So I think it's a really cool thing that it just opens more pathways. And then maybe we do get to find out down the road something that does help keep your dog cognitively healthy for longer.
Yes, the amateur, most dog owners are not trained in dog biology or cognition, might attribute the causality in the wrong direction, just anecdotally looking at, well, here's the way I did it with my last dog, so here's the way I'm going to do it with this dog, not realizing, well, you're getting it backwards. But here we can find, should we be encouraging more mental or more physical or both? What should we focus our attention on? Or something completely unexpected that there's a particular eating schedule or something that influences both, and that's where we need to focus. But you don't know until you do the study, so keep asking those what-if questions. When you were describing those results and what further inquiry might be necessary, like most of our listeners, I'm guessing, I was thinking, with humans, how does it work? Does staying active helps my mental faculties, or is it my mental faculties being alert enough that I can be more active? Are any of these results being applied to humans, or are you anticipating how can we use this study with humans, or is that even a consideration?
No, absolutely. I'm personally a veterinarian, so I'm in this for the animal health. But as a bigger project and as far as like the greater science community, yes, we're always looking for how to help humans live longer, happier lives as well. And that is actually the really cool thing about dogs. Dogs actually share a lot of our aging diseases, but do live shorter lives. So allow us that ability to study things in a shorter time span. And then also more importantly, they share our environments. we can study all sorts of things on sea urchins or flies or mice and things, but they might be in a lab. They're not going home with us every day and living lives with us. You know, I'm personally really bad about sharing food with my dog. So my dog tends to eat a little bit of everything I eat, and he goes places with me. So when I'm more active, he's more active, because that's me taking him on walks and things like that. And if I'm having like a week where I'm super busy with work, I'm not as active. He's not as active. So his environment directly reflects mine. So I think it's this amazing opportunity in a species that does live a shorter life. So allows us a shorter span that we have to follow them to get to study environmental factors as well, which is a big part of our project, is we're collecting a lot of data from the environments as well.
Yeah, certainly whatever allergens or toxins that are in your home or your neighborhood impact your dog just the way they impact you.
Exactly.
I think this is so exciting, and it encourages pet owners, whether they're participating in the project or not, to be more attuned to what they're doing with their dog, to their dog, for their dog. And certainly if they're participating in the project, I assume then they have to track things like activity and food and all of that. I would anticipate someone's going to take better care of their dog knowing, oh, I'm going to have to share this information, and not think, oh, maybe I should be buying the better dog food if I'm going to be telling people what dog food I'm using, or maybe I should be more diligent about taking my dog for a couple walks a day instead of saying, I only walk my dog every other day, even though she would like to have a walk a couple times a day. Is that something that you see happening? People are just taking better care of their dog just because they know they're being watched, so to speak?
Yes, I think there is always that possibility. We can't help it. People have their own internal judgments and biases that they put on others who might be watching them. So if they feel like they should be walking their dog more, then because they've directed it down, they might do so more. However, these surveys we like to send out are only a couple of times a year. And we very much want people to stick with their normal and tell the truth. We get thousands and thousands and thousands. You are not a person that we're judging. When we read your survey, these are numbers. We have far too much data for us to go look at an individual person. And we want the data of maybe you are someone who only walks your dog once a week. And is that okay? And we won't know unless we get to compare someone who walks their dog 3 miles every day and someone who walks their dog 3 minutes every day. We won't get to know. There's also breed differences. Some dogs have higher activity levels that they need met, and other dogs are little couch potatoes. We just want their data. We don't want people to change anything, and we won't know if they do, because like I said, there's so much data we won't be able to see. But I am sure that to some degree, when people have to write things down, they get a little better. But like I said, we don't know what's better yet, and we won't know until we get to look at everybody. So we hope everyone just keeps doing what they're doing and then just filling out the surveys as honestly as they can.
And you may find that there's certain breeds that get stressed out by too much exercise. You know, not every dog is a Rhodesian Ridgeback that is an extreme athlete, and there's no way you'll ever give it as much exercise and activity as it can handle or would want. And I might even be wrong about that. Maybe the Rhodesian Ridgebacks, it's like, they would live twice as long if they weren't going 20 miles every day and hunting down giant game. But you learned that from the study. You said that it's surveys a few times a year. I'm assuming that there's information like diet and activity. Is there anything invasive required, like blood draws or fecal samples or anything?
If you're just part of the dog aging pack, no. If you get those done at your primary care veterinarian, we ask you to turn those in with your medical records each year when you fill out your health survey, which is your annual survey that we ask you. Just the first one's, how's your dog's health been before you joined the dog aging pack? And then every year, it's, how's it been since for this past year? And we do have diet, activity, and lots of other things included in there that we ask for information. When you sign up, you are asked if you'd like to be involved in a cohort, which is a smaller sub-study. And there's a couple of those. If you say yes, then you get put into a pool that may get selected to participate. And there's a few that do have things that are a little more invasive. We don't do anything we think would really be bad for them. But one is called Foundation, and that's where we send you a DNA kit. and we just ask you to collect their DNA. Another is precision, and that one actually does look for fecal samples, urine samples, blood samples, and hair samples. And in the end, we're going to be looking at different metabolic predictors of health, things that we could detect earlier that might in the end be something we can have intervention to prevent down the road issues, but we don't know until we correlate them with those issues down the road. And then we have another cohort, the Centurion. This is only for our 0.1% oldest dogs. So we take all the dogs and the 0.1% oldest of all of them, we ask them for their genetic sampling. And so DNA swabs, and we're kind of looking at how their genes are a little different because of the aging process. And then we have one more cohort, which is our clinical trials or intervention. And that's where we're doing the clinical trials with rapamycin. That's probably our most selective group. They have to meet certain criteria. And then they come in and they get either a neurologic examination or a cardiac evaluation, as well as blood, urine, and fecal samplings. They go into two groups, whether it's placebo or the study medication, and we follow them for 3 years. So there are a few little smaller segments, but the general population, it's just surveys.
And if you do fall into one of those groups where it's blood draws, fecal sample, if you are doing regular checkups with your veterinarian, they're handling that anyway. So it's unlikely that this would be not part of your dog's regular care. You just need to tell your vet to share the results with you, or to capture results that they might not otherwise be screening for in a blood test, so that if they know you're in the study, what to share with the Dog Aging Project.
We actually will send them sampling kits because we don't ever want this to be cost prohibitive for any owner. So like you said, this might be something they're doing in their annuals. But if someone doesn't do blood work every year, at their annual, we'd love them to collect blood work and send it to us. So we actually send them kits at their annual checkup. Their veterinarian can collect the samples for them and then just ship it back to us. And we take care of making sure the tests we want are run and that nothing is cost prohibitive, that a certain lab test that they don't want to do this year because it's...
Those can get expensive. Yes. Yeah. That exactly. was our experience with Peaches, when you have to have, you know, blood draws every month or two to, you know, test the chemo and all that. That can get a little expensive, but certainly if you're helping out with supplying the kits, I'm sure people can find a reason not to participate, but I can't think of what that would be, that you're going to pay attention to your dog anyway, and you guys make it easy. So anyone interested in the Dog Aging Project, just click on the link in the description. And not just if you want to nominate your dog, but if you think this is an important study, I want to make sure that we can take care of our dogs for as long as we can and in the best way we can, that you can make a tax-deductible donation just by clicking on the donate button. So if this is something near and dear to your heart, you can participate in that fashion.
Yes, absolutely. We have grants from the National Institute of Aging, but we also are partially funded by private donations, and we greatly appreciate them because it means more things can be done and we can always go farther and look at new and different things that we didn't have funding up before. So funding is always incredibly important in research.
Yes, you can always use more funding. You don't see, I think this is even referenced in a Simpsons episode, the research scientists driving around in the Ferraris, living in their mansions, eating their lobster and drinking their champagne. This is a great cause. And if you can help out with a donation, wonderful, but absolutely help out by nominating your dog for participating in the Dog Aging Project. Dr. Rachel Melvin, thank you so much for this important work that you and your colleagues are doing, and thank you for being a guest on Dog Words.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you've been listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Thank you to Dr. Rachel Melvin from the Dog Aging Project for joining us today. Remember, they need owners of all kinds of dogs in order to gather useful data. You can nominate your dog for participation regardless of age, breed, or where you live in the United States. Use the link in the description to complete the brief survey. There are also links to the Dog Aging Project's main website and all of their social media. Next time on Dog Words, Kim Brophy explains the problem of treating your dog like a pet. A big thank you to alternative string duo The Wires, featuring cellist Sasha Groshong and violinist Laurel Morgan Parks, for playing the wonderful music you've heard on today's and previous episodes of Dog Words. Supporting The Wires supports our mission. Learn more about The Wires, including their concert schedule, at thewires.info and download their music on iTunes. Check out fiddlelife.com and learn to play fiddle and cello fiddle online from Laurel and Sasha, even if you've never played before. Join Laurel and Sasha as they explore new music and delve into the inspiration behind each work as hosts of Sound Currents on 91.9 Classical KC. Click on the Sound Currents link in the description for more information. Go to rosyfun.org to shop and get links to our social media. As always, please download, follow, rate, and share Dog Words. This helps us with sponsorships, then Rosie Fund can help more dogs. Send us your comments, questions, and suggestions via the contact form at rosyfun.org, and let us know if you would like to be a sponsor or a guest of the Dog Words podcast. Thank you for listening to Dog Words, and remember, we save each other.